My name is Marion Small, and what I've been working on for the last little while are ways that I think teachers can do this differentiating instruction thing in a way that you can actually manage. And so I've had opportunities over the last few years to do a lot of stuff. So what I'm going to do today is actually show you what happened when we tried the things. So I'm going to share some of the things that we've tried, and I have lots of student work for you to see how the students responded to these activities. One of the things that we're trying to do in a classroom is to face the fact that the kids are so different in the same room, and there's only one of you and a whole lot of them. And how do you handle it all? And in honesty, not many teachers I know can actually develop a whole lot of individual things for a whole lot of individual kids. So the question is, what can you do that's really possible? And you want to do it in such a way, I think, that the kids who are what you might call the weakest kids or the struggling kids don't feel that way like all the time. When the way you handle things for a struggling kid is to visibly dumb things down, everybody sees it and it doesn't feel all that great. So are there ways to do it a different way? So you'll be the judge and see what you think. We're going to talk about what I've labeled as two strategies, and it's not like I've invented them, it's just how I've done them that might be a little different. One of them is called the use of open tasks. It's just what it sounds like. That is a very open-ended question, and you'll see that. And the other is something called parallel task, and I'll explain what those mean. And I just remembered I should tell you that I'm going to give you a website address at the end so you can download the whole PowerPoint. Should have said that. But what I won't have on there are all the student samples, because the file would have been enormous. So it'll have all the slides that aren't the student work. Is that okay with everybody? All right, so you'll see all those words. So we'll talk about open tests and parallel tests. I do live in Canada, and I've been doing this particular kind of thing for about 5 years now, and it's become fairly widespread in certain communities, and we're doing it at every grade. So we're doing it in grade 1, and we're doing it in grade 12. So it's not like this is only for, now I know our session today is 3 to 8, but I just want you to know I don't see it as a different idea at different grade levels. The notion behind it is that even though I'm teaching some tiny little thing, that tiny little thing has to be part of some big thing. So if you want to differentiate instruction, you have to figure out what the big thing is. And the reason is that if it's too narrow, there's like no room to differentiate. Like it's like that wide. But if you think wide, there's places for them and for them and for them. So you first have to say to yourself, what is it I'm really after anyway? That's hard work, by the way, because I've been working with lots of teachers and we'll spend like 20 minutes figuring that one out sometimes. And then once you do that, you have the room to differentiate. I use the words developmental levels. You can use them in all kinds of different ways, but just in your mind, you have kids are all along the spectrum, so this idea needs to apply to all of them or it doesn't work, but it might apply different ways to different people. Kids, this only works if there is not a pat answer everybody has to give you, because then you're not differentiating. So there has to be choice in how a student responds, and you'll get a whole lot of different kinds of responses. Some are pretty tight and some are pretty wide, and you'll see exactly what happened. In an open task, the idea is posing one single, like a single question. I mean, it could be two sentences, but a single question that what I call evokes a lot of responses. So here's a little example. It's not in the slides, but here's an example. If I said to a grade three, a third grade class, sorry, that's grade three's Canada, third grade class, the answer is 18. What's the question? I could get 6 times 3. And I could get 17 plus 1, but I could also get, that's how old my sister is. And I have to be happy with that for this to work. Does everybody understand what I'm saying? So that the kid who actually says that, like, actually feels good, because, like, I seem to like the answer. And kids watch us like little hawks, and they're looking at our faces, and they can tell if you like the answer or not. So my premise is this only works if you are truly open to the unexpected. And then you do stuff with your answers, but you got to be open. The parallel task, and we'll look at that second. What I do there is I want to be a little bit more specific. Like I want something to happen, but I know there's a bunch of kids for whom I can only make it happen if I almost do it for them. I can pull it out of them, but it's really not real. Do you know what I mean? Like you almost say everything except the last sentence and they say it, but really you did it. So you want something they could really do, but it's about the same thing and it's really about the same idea. It's just more manageable for them. And again, you'll see what that looks like in a few minutes. Whatever. Okay. So here's an example. Here's one quite like the one I just said. You provide an answer, for example, the number 42, and ask students to create questions with that answer. And I mentioned that the diversity is interesting and informative, and the reason I said that is because some teachers I worked with were worried that kids would be lazy, and they wouldn't do much. You know, they'd say, all right, 41 plus 1, like, leave me alone. And that isn't what happened in general. So here are some responses I honestly got. How I figured it out is I started at one number less than 42. The number for the plus sign goes up. The number after the plus sign goes down. All of these questions equal up to 42. I'm happy. You with me on that? Like, I think that is great. And you as a teacher see this kid and you kind of know what this kid, like, this kid knows stuff. And you think about what could I do with him or her next. And it really gives you what they call assessment for learning information. Things that you now know this kid can do. I'm guessing it was a girl because it's extremely complete. But it is interesting. They went kind of all the way. Now it's interesting that she wrote 42 plus 0. Do you see that on the end? But she didn't write 0 plus 42. So that would be like a great question to talk about. Like, I noticed you did this, and there's just lots of opportunities that arise that don't arise when you say, here's my question, like, give me the answer. So that's what happens. But there's more answers to this one. This is what this one kid wrote, and it's hard to read, and some of it is hard to read, but I just want you to see the diversity. So he says, 42 people watching 42 TV channels. That tells me, like, zip, right? I know nothing. Then he has a little bit of calculation, he thinks. Then there's something about 42 light bulbs. I don't know why that's there. It's just there. The other one is interesting. He has two pentadecagons. I think they mean a 15-sided shape, and they made up the word. Pentadecagons, plus one octagon, plus one rhombus. All right, like, this was like a real kid, like, because I didn't make that one up. And so you just never would have predicted. Who would have predicted a kid would do that? Then how did they come up with pentadecagon? And there's all kinds of interesting things to talk about. Then they have some things about the minute hand just two clicks past the eight. Isn't that cool? That's a cool answer. And then they said something about 20-pound pairs of socks. That's good. And then something about the amount of Chris Van Allberg's books, minus, you know, two times minus two. So you just know what the kid's interested in. You know, you just know a lot of stuff about this kid, and you have a lot of opportunity to do stuff with this kid, which I don't think happens in a closed situation. Here's another kid. I'm not going to read all of them, but do you see all this stuff that they've got there? Like, so kids were just doing a lot of stuff. Anything on there that strikes your eye? Yeah, some interesting choices. Now, I have to tell you, if you read these carefully, you'll see some wrong stuff in there too. Like, there'll be a lot of right stuff, and then there'll be like a wrong stuff. And then you're deciding as the teacher, is the wrong stuff because they really didn't know it, or is the wrong stuff they were just like careless or whatever. And you make decisions. If a kid writes all that stuff and has one wrong thing, like, I just don't care. Yep.
Did you ask them to fill the whole page?
Nope. No, we did not. We just gave them the question and said, write what you want. That's for real. For real. Yep. That one was a grade 3. Honest, like, really. Okay. I'm not sure. I just want you to see, like, what they did without reading in detail. They have all this stuff that they did. And what was interesting is how they decided to do it. If you read the very bottom one, the kid is doing 200 minus 58, but they wrote, or 158, and they chose to write it as a word problem because they probably thought, you know, it's a math teacher, they probably want one of those. So there's some straight little calculations, but they weren't like trivial. There were lots of calculations, but then there were these problems as well and these situations that the kids came up with. But then I did get this. The answer is 42. What is the question? 41 plus 1 is 42. It is even. Yeah, I see you in the back. So what I have to do is, it really is about what I want to come out with next. So the reason I had the big idea for this one is I want kids to know that every number can be represented a whole lot of different ways. And the ways that you represent it tells you different stuff about the number. So some of the kids did multiplication things, like 2 times 21. So I'm going to pick one that was a multiplication and pick one that was an addition and say, do you think we could have written that one as a multiplication? Like, I don't think so. How come? Why did you like that one? What did this one make you think of? So it's really about, like, 42 means a whole lot of stuff, and I just have a whole lot of fodder to work with. So one of my big ideas is that there are many representations for a number, and each representation really gives you a different kind of info about the number. And so this gives me the meat to work on. So it's not all done. When this is over, you don't close your books and it's over. This is like the starting point for a much longer discussion. So that was a good question. Is that fair? Does everybody get the kind of thing I mean? But I want you to see that you're going to get a kid who does that, and you're going to have to live with that. Or not, you don't have to live with it. You go over. You look at that kid and you know them because they're yours. And you decide, can he do more? Can she do more? Should I push? Or are we really thrilled they said two things? It depends on the kid, right? So what I want is the kid who really could only say two things to feel like I really answered her question. I got it right. Because if you're always wrong, it's not good. You got to be right. And so I want that kid to be able to be right. So that's the motivation. So that was one example. You're going to try this question first yourself. Usually when we have percent questions, it goes something like, what is 52% of 38 or something like that? So this is mine. 72 is a percent of something. You get to pick the percent and the something. So everybody in the room, just think of something that you would say. It doesn't have to be too fancy. And hopefully everybody understands there's a whole lot of answers to this. Some answers are simpler than other answers, but I want it to be simple enough so that most of my kids could answer. Now, this one was in a grade 7 class, the stuff that you're going to see. And if a kid doesn't even know what percent is, you can't ask this. I mean, you have to have some baseline from which you're working, and I have to believe that in this situation they know about percent. What's different about this question than the usual one is that you get to choose two things instead of one. That's the only thing that's really, really different. So this is the kind of thing I would expect. Some of you might have said 10% of 720. Did anybody do that one? Okay. 100% of 72? That's like a totally good answer. 72% of 100 is another totally good answer. A lot of kids will pick 50%. 50% is a good number. So 50% of 144, and I just threw in another one. So those are ones you might expect. So here's the work I got. That's what kid one did. Like 72 is 72% of 100. Then he went, it's 36% of 50. What was he thinking or she thinking? Double half. Is everybody okay with that? Then they went to 18% of 25, and then I noticed they abandoned ship. They didn't continue double halving. So then they went to 100% of 72. And then they did the double half thing again, right? Do you see that? Going down 200, 400, 800, 1600, and then like a weird thing happens, and now they're at 2000. So then you can go and ask them, like, where'd that one come from? And there's lots to talk about. But the reason I like this, and do you see way down there, like those really crazy ones? And what's interesting about this is that so many teachers just don't believe they'll do it, and they did it. Like, they really did it. Because the teacher was positive about it, and, you know, and it showed. Here was, I guess I didn't put the others. There's a whole bunch of those. Where did I have? No, I didn't. I thought I had others, and I chose which ones to cut. Another strategy. So that strategy, if you want to call it a strategy, is that simple. You work out a question. You get an answer. You say, the answer is, tell me the question. That's really all I did for the first one, for the 42 one. And for the percent one, all I did is that if you usually have a problem and you give them two numbers and they give you the third one, only give them one and they give you two. That easy. If I ask for perimeters of shapes, instead of saying all four sides are, I say, here are three sides. You decide what the fourth side is and give me the perimeter. That's all it took for me. To open it up. So to me, this was important that it would be a strategy that you didn't have to spend 7 years in graduate school to learn. You could just, like, you got it and you could do it and it would be easy. And you wouldn't do it like all the time, but you could absolutely do it easily when you wanted to. Another strategy was asking kids how two things are alike and how they're different. So it could be two graphs, or it could be two shapes, or it could be two numbers, or it could be two whatever kind of makes sense together. It could be two operations, like how is adding like subtracting, how is it different? It could be whatever two things kind of make sense together. So here's one I've used. 350 and 550, two numbers. If I ask you how these numbers were alike and different, what would you say? So what would you say? If I asked you how they were alike, be a kid, what would a kid say? Three digits. Zero at the end. Fives, fifties, all that kind of stuff. And indeed, we got that. What would you say they're different? How are they different to you? One is less than the other. A lot of them compared the numbers. One has a three, the other one doesn't. One has two fives, the other one, like you get everything. So here's what I got, and this is just an example. I expected some kids to say multiples of 50. That's too adult. I didn't get any of those. They said they had 50s, but they didn't say multiples of 50. Both are multiples of 10, and most of them said it by saying they're zeros on the end. Both are even. Both have three digits, which you said. Both are between 100 and 1,000. Now, this is an interesting one because what a teacher can do, like we are really in control. So as the kids are working, you go around to a kid that you feel you can talk to and say, give me two numbers there between. And they'll pick something. And let's just say they picked 100 and 1,000. And so you make sure you call on him. And the kid says that. Now, as soon as the kid says that, another kid can raise their hand and say they're between 200 and 900. And another kid can raise their hand and say they are between 300 and 800, you know. And so kids learn from other kids. That's a good thing. So more success for more kids because they see an idea. And if it all comes from you, it's just not, it doesn't work quite the same way as if they get the idea from another kid. So I kind of like that. So I am a control freak. So I would actually plant that to happen because I want it to happen and then make sure it does. I had more of those. Okay. That's enough of them. This was an interesting one. I plant this last one. One needs 10 base 10 blocks to show it and the other doesn't. So if you show 550 with base 10 blocks, what would you use? Probably 500s, 510s, you're done. That's 10 blocks. The other one doesn't take 10 blocks. So, you know, you could start a whole little seed of things going that away. So, you know, you again get to plant seeds so that they can grow. One kid, this is all I got. They both have 50 at the end. They start with different numbers. Goodbye. That was for real. And that would be sad if that's all the kid could do, but it might be. Then I got this. Okay, so I have a whole lot of alikes. They both have 50. They both have three digits. They both have fives and the tens. They both have zero and the ones. They're both numbers. You know, all this kind of stuff. At the bottom is interesting because he said something that I don't think is perfect. 550 rounds up in hundreds. 350 does not. Okay, so they're really thinking thousands, right? You know, and so again, so I see this as a good thing, not a bad thing, because I may never have even known this kid that had this wrong idea, but I caught it because I let stuff happen and it got said. And you know how they keep really quiet, like they don't say more than they need to, just in case. And this kid said stuff, so I caught a problem. And so you can see all these various kinds of things. Another problem I gave, and this was, you can see, I gave some of these to several grades. This was in a grade 6, 7, 8. I think this one was in a 6. About how many people do you think can fit in the school? Explain your thinking. All right, so just, you know, it's not a new problem or anything. I think there's maybe about 450 people in the whole school, and that was like the end of the story. No reasons, no whatever. And then I got a kid who did all this work that said, how many kids are really in the school? He knows they all fit in the gym. He figures that there's this many equivalent classrooms in a gym. He counts classrooms like he does all this stuff. Same room. So if differentiating really means that in the same room you really do have those kids, you got to find a way to ask a question so that everybody can do something, but they can do what they can do. So this kid chose to do all that stuff. And I didn't bring all of them there because there were way too many. But I had a whole bunch of like really interesting responses to this one as to how they calculated this thing. You try this one. You combine two integers. And I want you to notice I use the word combine because it's vague. So I am the queen of vague. So vague for me means that I deliberately am not to the letter, because then it isn't open anymore. Like, everybody will do exactly what I want. So part of the art of all this is being slightly vague, which really bugs kids, not little kids, you know, whatever, but older kids who are used to, you know, what do you mean, ma'am, have trouble with this. And I don't want to minimize that. Initially, it's really tough because they keep asking you, well, did you want this or did you mean this or whatever? And you have to be, it's hard, but you have to say, I don't, whatever you decide, and you have to mean it. So when they decide something, you kind of have to go with it. So when I said combine, I purposely didn't say add or multiply or what operations to use. I said combine because that left it open for them to decide. So I said you combine two integers to get negative two. What integers might you have combined? And this was in a grade 7 as well. How did you combine them? So I got stuff like this. I combine negative 5 and positive 3 to get negative 2. It is negative, so subtract it. So that's interesting. So what do I say to this kid? They're like, what did you mean by so subtract it? Do you think, you know, what? So how are you really interpreting that negative 2? And it gives me a question to kind of delve into, because you know that when we teach integers, we make a big deal about how the little negative sign on a number is quite different than the subtraction sign. So this kid is kind of seeing them related, and of course they are related. And so what did you mean subtract it? Like, subtract it from what? You know, and so it gives you an opportunity to talk. Notice he didn't even speak to the other one that he wrote or she wrote. They just wrote it there. So what would you say to this kid? You see that work in front of you. What would you say next? Okay, I could go that away. If you combine negative 5 and negative 3, would it still be negative 2? Like, what happens then? That would be a great way to go. Anything else? Are you really subtracting? So going back to the subtracting and the negative sign. Because it says I combined, but he didn't really tell us how he combined, did he? So are you subtracting? Are you adding? Like, what are you doing there? What does combine mean for you? Right? So there is an implicit adding, but you see he never said it. So that was a good thing to bring up. I was interested in why he did negative 7, 5 next. And if that was kind of a pattern, like, which one would you do like next? And so you would see what the kid had to say and find out what they'd have to say. I got this one, and I really put it on for what's on the right. When I did 10 minus 8, it got me 2. I need to get minus 2, so I switched the numbers to 8 minus 10. That's cool. So, you know, it gives you some insight into what the kid's thinking and how he's thinking and all that sort of thing. I asked this of a bunch of grade 3, 4, and 5 students. Use any 4 tangram pieces to build a shape that looks like a house. Use geometry words to describe your house. And the reason it's open is because a house is in the eye of the beholder, right? It could look really weird, but if it's a house to them, like, so be it, it's a house. So I wanted to do that, but I really wanted to see what kind of geometry words they use. So I got a range of things that went from 2. So I got this, small triangle, big triangle, big triangle. Which isn't very sophisticated words, but it does look like a house, like a regular kind of house, and they use some geometry words. And then I got this. 4 tangram pieces, I use 4 triangles, 6 right angles, 5 triangles, 1 square, 8 45 degree angles, blah, blah, blah. Same room. So, I mean, that was the important thing for me, the same room. So if I do some tight little thing, that guy on the left maybe isn't with me, and if I do some, you know, and maybe if I ask something simple enough that I feel everyone can do it, that guy on the right is wasting his energies when he could be doing more. So that's the motivation. This one was so much fun. I asked how many ways you can think of to measure a pumpkin. And it was amazing what they said. I don't have all of them here because there were just like too many. But the one I didn't have and I should have put here, and I'll tell you, it was so cute, was how long it takes to roll down a hill. No adult I know would have thought of that, right? You know, it's a very unique kid answer, but you'll see some of the things they did. You can measure its circumference. This was grade 3. You can measure its circumference. You could measure its mass in grams or kilograms. You could also measure its height. Like, this is a precocious little grade 3. For the pulp, you could measure how much there is. So, you know, that could lead to a whole big discussion. Like, you know, how would you measure that pulp stuff? You know, what would you do? What kind of units would you use? What tool would you use? All that stuff. You could also measure how long it takes to grow it to a certain size. You know, with me, because a lot of teachers do stuff with kids. You know, the bean look plant looks like this day and this day. So it makes sense. Here's another response. Height, width, length, perimeter, weight, mass. Like, those are all the words I heard about measurement. There you go. There they are. Okay. Another kid has circumference. How old it is. Look, the kid actually wrote a lapse time. So that teacher is doing some amazing stuff in that room. How much it weighs, width and length. I think I can measure a pumpkin in three different units. Millimeters, because it might be a small pumpkin. Centimeters, because it might be a bigger pumpkin. Decimeters, because it might be a very big pumpkin. And so what's kind of nice is, well, first of all, one of the things that's nice is that you laugh. And really, a teacher would smile when they got stuff like that, and that's what kids see. So classrooms are supposed to be sort of happy-ish places, and it's really nice to see kids, you know, laughing and smiling. And when kids say something that another kid wouldn't have thought of, like, they respond, you know, say, ooh, or whatever it is, and it's kind of like that part on its own is nice. But it also is, it gives me a window. So now I say, so that really small millimeter pumpkin, like, show me how big that one is. And, you know, so what is the, they're going to really help me understand what they think this is. So clearly this kid knows millimeters are smaller than ever, but I don't even know if he has any sense at all of what a millimeter is. So I need to ask some more stuff. Decimeters is interesting because nobody I know really even uses decimeters. So, you know, all of those kinds of things are opportunities for me. I asked them, why might it be useful to measure the length and width of a room by counting how many steps you need to get from one wall to the next? So we teach all about non-standard measurement at some point in elementary schools, and we want kids, we use it sort of as a springboard to why you go to inches and feet and all that kind of stuff, but we want to know what the kids are thinking about why it might be useful. Because real adults, you know, if you're going to a store, like, you don't always get out your measuring tape. You kind of paste things off and you do it. So anyway, here's how two different kids responded. Kid one says, it would be good when there are no rulers or meter sticks around. Okay, so they got that idea. And kid two gives me this whole long diatribe about how stupid it is. You should use a ruler, because if you go to a carpet store and ask them for, you know, steps, they won't know what you're talking about and whatever. So he does get the idea of why you use standard measure, and took a long time to tell me. And what was interesting about it is it's like okay for them to say that, and you have these two opposing points of view in the class, and you can say, like, who votes with her or who votes, like, it could lead to kind of some fun stuff. So I said, why would it be good? This kid chose to say it wouldn't be good, and what I have to do then is let that happen, because I watch teachers who actually would say to the kid, well, I did ask you, though, why would it be good? And so they kind of turn that one down, if you understand what I mean. And I understand why you do it, because you have something in your mind and you want something to happen. But I guess I'm telling you that I think if you turn stuff down, the whole thing falls apart and kids won't try the next one. Because they just worry that theirs will be the one you turn down. So it's hard, because you also can't let wrong things just sit there. So it's a very delicate dance. But it does seem to me important to let kids do what you didn't really anticipate or ask for, if it's good, if that makes sense. So he gave me a good answer. It's about the big thing, not exactly what I asked. And I'm telling you this again because it's really huge. Almost every teacher I know keeps saying, but I asked for, or but I said. And I guess, but I don't like the word but anymore. That's the only word I'm hearing. So I'm in a classroom, I'm listening to it, and I don't know what the kid is hearing, but I'm wondering if they're hearing what I'm hearing. As soon as I hear but, like, all my little antenna go up. And so I don't know, it's just a little thing that all of a sudden I'm in a new place, like, but is a bad word for me now. Okay. I ask kids about trapezoids, and the reason they know about trapezoids, like, it's a fancy word, but they have those little red pattern blocks, so lots of teachers tell them it's a trapezoid. What can you make if you put together three isosceles? It's a really fancy word, trapezoid. So I just tell the kids, like, I just, you know, those kind that, just like the red blocks. And in fact, what they had in front of them were red pattern blocks. So if you put three of these together, what do you get? So each of you, just draw yourself a little sketch of what you think you would show. just so you have a frame, a point of view when you look at the rest. And one of the things is that some kids didn't do a lot and some kids did more. So if it says, what can you make? I could have said, show me three things you could make. And I might do that, but if I say, show me three things, I'll only get exactly three things. And if I say, show me at least three things, I will still only get exactly three things. So if I just say, show me what you can do, I can individually go around and encourage kids rather than limiting them to start with. So that's just sort of like, it's not like all the time, but that's why I did what I did, just so you know. Yep. Yeah, would I give a mark to it kind of thing? Is that what you mean? We talk about that a lot. And when I did this activity, it was certainly not to give a mark. It was really more, the big lingo about assessment for learning means I'm the teacher. I want to know where my kids are at. So I'm doing this to find out. But then people say, but if you do all this and the kids never see it on tests, they, you know, it changes their perspective on it. So I actually would do something like this sometimes on a test. They would have seen them like that before, but I would probably tell them stuff. So I'd either give them what you, some kind of a rubric, like I wanted, or I might say something like, I want you to amaze me. I want you to show me the most, you know, the most interesting answer you can, or whatever it is, because if it's assessment, it isn't fair if you're really open and say, just show me 42, and they write 41 plus 1, you got to give them full marks. But if you really want more than that, you have to do something. So you'll either have to say, I want you to razzle-dazzle me, or something that, some lingo you've worked on with the kids so they kind of know what you mean. It's not fair otherwise, but I also agree with people that if you do this in your classroom and never do it on an assessment, there is a message there. So I just think you have to do it slightly differently. Is that fair? Okay. So this is what the kids did, and you can compare it to what you did. I had one person say, you can make a longer isosceles trapezoid because they're all exactly the same shape. They have exactly the same angles and lengths, so they're all compatible with one another. I think it's an original shape, so it can be used in many situations. And I do have to tell you, I didn't bring everything I got. I did pick what I brought today. So not everybody said, you know, compatible and all these fancy words. But this was an example of, like, one real kid. Another kid did this. And it was a bigger sheet of paper, but I couldn't get it all on my scanner. But that's the idea of what they did. Is that okay? And they chose to name the shapes. I didn't really ask them to, but they did. Some of them are spelled wrong. You have to decide if you care at a particular point in time. I have this one. I should tell you about this sheet of paper. I did this in a class in a school district where they have sort of a style. And what they do is that the kids have to show evidence. And so the A, B, and C, like the kids are used to that kind of format. Because I did this in a lot of classrooms. And so the kids are kind of, you know, kind of drawing conclusions and all that kind of stuff. So that's all the reason that it's the format. That wasn't me. But essentially what the kid is saying when you read the whole thing is I made a whole bunch of shapes. Almost every time there were eight sides. So they did a bunch and they drew a conclusion. So that was a different kid. And the last kid I brought did this. You can make anything your imagination can come up with. I like what I did. So, you know, there's a range, right? And there's a range. And so I'm just going to say again, because I think it's so important, when you see that, you have to smile. Like, you have to like it as much as the pentagon, hexagon, decagon one. And they have to see you like it as much. And it changes everything. I was in a seventh grade class last Friday. I was co-teaching with a teacher. So we planned together and we talked together. And when we planned, he was a little tighter in what he was going to do than I wanted to be. So we had an hour session together. I was really very good and not overbearing and just said, well, did you ever think of, do you want to try this and whatever? And he was very, very nice. And so he went with me and he tried stuff. And so the kids, it was a lesson on fractions. So what he did is he gave them, some people had pattern blocks, some people had circle pieces. You know those circles that have all the parts? Some people had fraction strips. They had all kinds of different stuff. And they could pick whatever hole they wanted, and then they had to use other pieces to make up the hole, and they had to tell what fractions the other pieces must be to make that happen. And then the second part of the class was that you had your hole, you removed one piece, and you gave it to another kid, and they have to figure out what fraction you removed, but you tell them all the ones you left. Does everybody understand what? So you might have a circle, and you might have left a half, and you might have left a fifth and a fifth, and then there's a hole. And you tell the kids, this was a half, this was a fifth, this was a fifth, what's missing, and they have to figure it out. And a lot of them had materials in front of them. The kids did everything. The kids who had circle pieces fit in like pieces of circles, and some got wrong things and you had to help them, and others didn't. There was a kid in the room who was like, he converted everything to percents, and he was just like doing all this stuff, and that all happened, and it was a great class. It was really good. So when it was over, the teacher said to me, he was really surprised what happened. He didn't believe they would do all this stuff. He thought everything would be too hard, nobody would know what to do, and whatever. And he asked me if I was surprised, and I said, in honesty, I wasn't surprised, because I said, you let them try stuff. And he celebrated what different kids did. So he'd walk around and he'd see somebody who did something kind of different than somebody else, and he'd say, look what Jason did, you know, and Jason would go up, and it just, all these little people felt really good. And feeling good is step one. You know, nothing happens till you feel good. So anyway, this little girl, my story is, has to be, you know, you have to like it. And how could you not, really? You know, it's really cool. Yeah. I think you have to get them over, the kids who are older, you have to get them over being tight. Like that they think that you're hiding information from them, and they want you to tell them full disclosure so that I do what you want me to do. With little kids, I've never found that, but with bigger kids, they feel that way. But I was in this room, honestly, and he was a really nice teacher, so I'm sure they felt comfy in that class anyway. But we didn't have to say anything. They were like totally okay. But I really do believe, because I've lived it, that in some rooms, you have to convince the kids, I'm really going to expect a whole lot of different answers, and I'm going to love it if you give me something that nobody else gives me. And so that's why I can't tell you what to do, because I really want to be surprised. Like, you have to do a whole shtick. And you do it because teachers are actors and performers as much as teachers. You got to do whatever it takes. And I do believe different teachers have different personalities, and that affects how you do it. I also believe classes have different chemistries, and that affects how you do it too. So there might be some rooms where you have to work really harder on what does it look like. I have friends who will bring in examples of student responses, but from a different class, an unnamed class, so they're not saying, look what Jason did, because then if you're not Jason, you feel crummy. So they'll bring somebody in from Mrs. So-and-so's class, and without a name, and they do it that way. So different people do it different ways. I ask kids to show how to put together squares to create shapes with 8 sides, and here are some of the things I got. First, you make a plus sign out of squares. So does that have 8 sides? Not yet, right? Okay. So then they said, once you have finished that, you overlap the parts of the plus sign. The second, you see all that weird stuff? After this step, you have made an octagon, exclamation point. Who would have thought of that? Like, not me. You wouldn't have. So, this is part of, if you want insight into what's in your student's head, you can get it, because I wouldn't have ever thought to do that. So that was, you know, she had just pictures of her things. Then I had kids, I had a whole sheet like this. This is only part of it that I scanned. And what's interesting is they don't all have 8 sides. Right? All right. So I want you to talk to somebody next to you and tell us in a minute, what would you say to this kid if that's what you saw? So just talk it over for a couple minutes. Okay. So I'm going to ask you what you said. Okay. Lots of ideas I hear. All right. So what would you say to this kid? Just like kids, you know, lots of talking until I ask. Right. So what would you say to this kid? How many sides does a square have? Okay, so I'll be the kid and I'll say 4. And now what? Does that shape have 8 sides? Okay, so would a lot of you think about that? You know, does that shape have 8 sides? I saw a hand way in the back. I think they need to know what a side is. They need to know what a side is first. So what are the sides? So on that very first one, I may say, point to the sides for me. And as they point, maybe they'll notice, you know, and I'm sure some people are pointing, like it's weird on that one, because you might think they're pointing to, they're probably pointing internal, right, to those things. So we have to talk about exactly what you're saying, like what is a side anyway. Because when you look at it, your first instinct might be, well, it's wrong. But then you got to figure out what's in the kid's head, and so you ask these kinds of questions like you're suggesting. What were you thinking? Okay, so that was, okay, so what you have to do, that's why you have to ask the question, so what was in your head? So, oh, I get it, you were doing the perimeter is 8, so let's like look at yours and see if it worked. And then you go through, oh, that's 8, and yeah, that, you know what I'm, so something that looks wrong turns right. Because it's ambiguous, you know, there she goes again being ambiguous. So the idea is that, but I really liked the other question too, was about what is a side, because it brought up a whole good idea. So somebody else, what's really going to happen in most classes is I won't say a word. Somebody's jumping on that guy, like before I open my mouth. Some other kid is jumping on that guy, and, you know, hold your horses, let's hear him out. What were you thinking? And then you get to bring out some stuff. So usually it isn't even you. It really is another kid who said, but, you know, she said this 8 size and that doesn't have and whatever. So it's really great. And the unit thing is a good thing because you're really distinguishing what you're talking about. So they really were doing perimeter. If it was a perimeter question, were they right? Totally. Okay? So they had other ones. Those are the ones I think I copied. Oh, there were even more. Like it went on and on. It was this huge sheet of paper this kid did. So there were all these things that they did. And I had a whole lot of, this one was interesting because I had, I didn't see anybody who didn't come up with something for me on that one. Like that was a very, accessible question for a lot of kids. Okay. A pattern begins like this. 2-5. How could it continue? All right. So you decide how you would continue it. You think about that for just 1 minute. What would you do next? Okay, so just to find out what you were thinking, did anybody have a next number of 2? A few people. Did anybody have a next number of 8? Did anybody have a next number? Well, what did you pick?
12.
Okay, and you picked 12 because why?
I went 2, 5, 12, 15, 22.
Is that okay with everybody? Totally reasonable. Okay, anybody else?
11.
11. Why'd you pick 11? Every other prime number. Wow. Okay. All right. And what were you going to say? Double plus 1 was hers. You with me on that? So she went. Now, that would be interesting. So will his pattern and her pattern end up being the same pattern in the end, do you think? I don't think so. But do you understand that all of a sudden by this, like we got to another idea? So we could try that out. Now, one of the really interesting things about pattern is that we actually do some bad things with patterns as teachers. So if my pattern, just listen to this one. Suppose I say 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12. Okay? 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12. What comes next? Tell me really like what you would say. But really, you don't know. Because really, it could all of a sudden go to 38. Or it could start with 2 again. Or anything could happen. So every time we say what comes next, we're doing a bad thing. We really should be saying what could come next and why would that work. Do you follow what I'm saying? So you told me 11 and my job was to say how come and you gave me a great reason. But honestly, like you know, there are high stakes tests that say what comes next and all they're looking for is conformity. Because if you're a nonconformist, you have like great answers that weren't that one. Really, really. So in any case, most teachers realize that if you only say 2-5, a lot of stuff will happen. They really do believe if you say 2-5, 8-11, then it's over. But it really isn't over, but they kind of think that. But for 2-5, you know it's pretty, a lot of stuff could happen. So this is what my kids did. Choice 1. One of the ways this pattern can continue is counting by fives, so it would, which it isn't, so it would end up looking like 2, 5, 8, 11, 14. So I got to go back to this one and say that counting by fives, like where was that? And find out what they were thinking. And it was probably just careless, right, that they really did mean counting by threes. The second way the pattern can continue is saying a number that always has a 2 and 5 example, which is really your pattern, 2, 5, 12, 15, 22, 25. You with me on that? So that's what they saw. Another kid says, buy 3 and keep on skipping 3. Okay, so that was, okay. So he didn't write all the numbers, but that's what he was giving me the rule. This one says, it could continue of doing this. 2, 5, 7, 10, 12, blah, blah. I think this is because it is going like 2, 3, 2, 3. So it will go like this. The 2 is to make 2, like the first number. The 3 is to make a 5. And a 2 to make a 7. Do you see what they're doing? So they're really thinking there was like a magic zero that you didn't see. So you added 2, you added 3, you added 2. Honestly, if you had seen that initially, you would just think the kid didn't know what they were doing until you ask them and you find out actually something was going on there that you could find out about. So it all depends on your perspective and what you feel like as a teacher. See, I love to be surprised. Like I just, you know, I like it. Some teachers find it difficult for a whole bunch of reasons. One of the reasons is practical. You have to respond instantaneously to a surprise. So you gotta be like ready to go. And it's hard sometimes, like what was going on, and you're processing it as fast as you can and you still don't know. And really what we have to do is stop out making ourselves do the work, but make that kid tell you what was going on. Like, I'm not figuring it out for you. You tell me. And it's hard because sometimes what they say is not very clear. All right. So that was an interesting one. Just another whole long one. Just to show you, I got this varied, varied number of responses so that you can see what they look like. I did this one. This was for algebra. This was in a grade 8. An expression involving the variable k has the value of 10 when k equals 4. I could have asked this in a grade 4, fourth grade, sorry, by saying, if I stick in 4, out comes 10, what did I do? Right? That's all I said. Stick in 4, out comes 10, what did I do? But I said it fancy, like you would in 8th grade, with algebra and using a variable. Is that everybody okay with that? So this is what I got. I got a lot of different things, but I got a lot like this. This kid wrote, k plus 6 equals 10. Is that okay? And then he did 6 a whole bunch of different ways. 8 minus 2, 20 minus 14, 3 plus 3, you know, 2 plus 2 plus 2. He wants a lot, he'll get a lot. And then I had another kid who just said the expression is 6 plus k, period. I know this is because 10 minus k and k was 4 is 6. And then it says something weird. Since the value of the expression is low, I took 4 away to get the other number to complete the expression. So I kind of know what he did, but it's really a very awkward way to say what was going on there. But that's what he said. So I had quite a variety of things there. These are just two examples. Tell everything you can about the number 100,000. Well, if you say everything you can, for some kids the you can is little, and for some kids the you can is big, so I'm just showing you a few of my responses. The number after 99,999, the number before 101,000. Now that's interesting, right? You know, a change in point of view here. So, does he really think there isn't anything between 100,000 and 101,000 or not? So I've gotta kinda go in there. The sum of, who knows why they picked this one, 99,758 plus 242. Okay? The number of dollars in $100,000. That's a very practical answer. The number of millimeters in 10,000 centimeters. That's an ooh. The number, you know, so it goes on. So this was pretty cool that they had kind of a variety. Then I had a page, don't read it, but I just want you to see how long it goes. It just goes on and on and on and on with all these different things that about 100,000. And then I had this one, and the kid even says you could go on forever. So do you see what they're doing? A half of 200,000, a third of 300,000, 20, you know, like, and you can go on forever. And then, I don't know, this must be a math prof's kid or something, because you got all these, like, fancy things over there. Very, very fancy square roots, all these kinds of numbers. And it wasn't a town where there is a university, so I'm only half joking. So that kid is sitting in the same room with a kid who was really going to struggle with that number. Do you understand? You know, that's my dilemma, your dilemma. Yeah. That's a good point. And because a lot of kids will answer you, lots of stuff can happen, and you have lots of opportunities to bring that vocabulary up. So I agree. I've already said all this, but I want to show you the other piece, too, before you leave. We've been using this word in my province lately, expose student thinking. There's all this stuff going on in their heads and you don't always hear it, and it exposes it. You kind of know. You hear the good stuff and you hear the bad stuff, and we have to hear both. Like, we have to hear the good stuff, but we really do have to hear the bad stuff too, so we know what to do to help these kids. It does make students feel like their contributions actually make a difference. And what I mean by that is if I ask a question and anybody could have given me the answer, it didn't even have to be me. Like, I was just like one of the masses. But if it's like if mine was the only person who did it that way, you just feel different. I am not young anymore. I really am not. And I still remember a high school teacher. I grew up in Baltimore, and he was not very great in math, but he was a fabulous teacher. And I remember now that in 11th grade, he named a theorem after me. And I still remember that. I'm telling you, thinking you make a difference matters to people. And so if you do something unique and your teacher acknowledges its uniqueness, I think that's worth a lot. So that happens too. It does enrich and broaden everyone's understanding, because even your brightest kid didn't think of what some other kid did. And hey, that's cool. I never thought of that. And so I think it's not just for struggling kids, and I think all benefit. But my main motivation in honesty was I wanted my weakest student to be able to answer my first question correctly, however it was. So that's all about the open question stuff. And I want to show you this other thing, because a lot of teachers have found this works for them. Parallel task, I call them. I don't know why. We used to call them something else. I'm into that word now. What they are two or more tasks that focus on the same big idea but at different levels. But they're so similar that when we discuss the kids' work, I talk to the entire class. It's not like, if you do this problem, we'll talk, and then I'm going over to these guys. It's like, we're all talking, because it's really the same thing, just a tweak. So here's an example. Option one, and how this works for me is that I post them both and you pick whichever one you want. Some teachers find that tough, and so they give different kids different ones. It's totally your call. Option one, twice as many people came in ahead of David's dad in a race. There were 112 runners. What was David's dad's position? Option two, twice as many people came in ahead of David's dad in a race. How many people might have been in the race? Do you see the difference? Same problem, way more latitude in option two. So what you could have in option two is two people ahead of David's dad and one little person behind David's dad and David's dad, and we're done. Right? You could draw a simple little picture, but that one you got to kind of figure out some more stuff. Okay, and so I have a set of questions. The way this works is when I prepare this, I need to have a set of questions I can ask kids no matter which one they did. So I would say to people things like, how do you know that there weren't exactly this many runners? You know, and I'd pick a number that I thought everybody could access. Or I'd say, if you drew a picture of the race, what would your picture look like? Like, if this were the race, here were all the participants, like, where on the line is David's dad? You with me on that? So I want them to know that David's dad is this away and not in the middle. So everybody could do that. So I plan it so that there's questions I can ask everybody. I'm just going to show you the responses here today, though. So I got, and the kids even knew it was called the teacher even told them it was called a parallel test. So here's his option one on the right hand side. David's dad is in the, because if David, so do you see they had the one and the two? David's dad is in third place. That is the one that the kid chose. Their way of saying it wasn't even that hot, but you saw. Down here it says there would be 18 people in the race. There was 12 in front of him and 6 behind him. Now we have a problem. Like, where's dad? So that's what you ask, like, where's dad? And now, was dad in that race? Yeah, so how many people were in that race? And you gotta kind of push it some more. So I don't want to paint a rosy picture, stuff bad happens. I'm over there, we got a kid who actually solved the problem with 112 and figured it all out. And on that one, I'm gonna talk to him about why they used the strategy they did, where did the numbers come from, how did you know what to do, all that kind of stuff. Here was another one. This is more algebra-y. Order the given values from least to greatest. Will your order be the same no matter what the value of n is? So this is what it looks like. They could pick things that had like fractions and squares and stuff in them and things that didn't. So this is still a hard thing. This is not for like the faint of heart. It's a harder question, but you wanted to focus on algebraic expressions, and this was a way to do it. So I wanted, for example, kids to know, you know, to tell me whether, like some kids told me 4N is always more than 3N. But that's not true. Because if N is a negative number or whatever. So I want to see what they say so I know what I got to do. Is everybody okay with that? So that's my plan. But some of them are easier than others. I had kids who saw the negative sign on the right and said, negative, it's lower. Which is a logical conclusion to draw. So I asked kids those kinds of things and I got something like this one. No, because it depends what the value of N is, because if the number is above 10 minus N, then so he was picking a particular thing he was looking at, N and 10 minus N, and told me he couldn't tell which would be greater. It would depend on where it related to 10. I asked this one. You know how they've been doing this for all eternity. You have sort of an operation that you make up. So if this mythical operation does this, if you put in 2 and 3 and out comes 12, if you put in 2 and 4 and out comes 14, blah, 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 if you put in 10 and 12, what comes out? Is everybody cool with that? So if it had been a plus sign, those would are the wrong answer. So you got to do something else. I gave them different ones. One of the ways they're different is that these are, how orderly they were, what operations were involved, and so on. So this, I don't know if this is the greatest example for a venue like today, but I had to figure out what is it that I want kids to focus on. So, for example, I want kids to focus on the fact that if you double a number, things go up by 2. If you triple a number, things go up by 3. So that was in my brain when I created this thing, and it would take me too long to go into the details, but when you look at the PowerPoint, you can look at it. And I got kids gave me all these reasons, and they even told me which one they picked. I picked this one because if you continue the pattern, I figured out because option 2 has a pattern, they aren't always totally clear, but you're seeing what they're thinking and you're hearing what they're saying. What real life situation might 10,000 describe versus 100,000? For some kids, 100,000 is a mythical number. 10,000 I can deal with. Like it might even be the size of a town, or it might be, something that I know. I saw what kids said. So just have a read. I couldn't believe they were talking about their college tuition when they were in eighth grade, but there they were. So you're just hearing what they're thinking. You know how some teachers, one of the reasons that people believe that you should have a generalist teacher, even in higher grades, is that you get to know the kids. They do, and that's why they don't believe in having specialist teachers. And it's interesting because I find that when you do this, you actually get to know the kids as well. A different way, but you do really get to know the kids. You don't get to know them so well if you're pretty tight about things because they can, I call them hide. Every teacher I know knows their really brightest students and they know their really weakest students, but then there are the hiders. They don't always get to know their hiders. Here's another one. I know we're really near the end here. You divide 2 numbers and the quotient is 2.5. What 2 numbers might you have divided? Versus you divide 2 fractions or decimals. And. So if you need to do the numbers one and the fractions or decimals one is too much for you, you can. Is that okay with everybody? So that was a really little change. And, I got all these kinds of answers from these kids. And a lot of them chose to use the whole numbers. They just felt better with them. There's lots more examples. I'll just tell you one before I close. There was one where I gave kids counters and I said, take 12 counters and start a pattern. And then they had to take 12 counters and start a non-pattern. It's bloody hard what's a non-pattern look like? You couldn't even tell me what you did because if it's a non-pattern, how you describe it? And the reason I did that was my underlying big idea I wanted kids to know is that even if you have some wonky little thing, it could become a pattern if you just keep duplicating it. And even if you started with something that looks like a pattern, I could totally screw it up on the next one, that you need what I call a pattern rule to totally know a pattern. Like if I don't give you the rule, you don't know. And so I want to make that clear by doing it that way. And it's interesting because it's just not a normal thing to do, but kids do that. So what I've done is I don't have student work for all of these. That was just a sample. But I've done about 300 of these open and parallel things for grades K to 8. And it is in that book in the NCTM booth if you're interested. And some of you got little cards about it. It's up to you. But it's been fun. And I've been working a lot lately with high schools. And so that's the next one, to do it for high schools. But right now we've done it for that. And the reason I did it is because even some teachers who liked the idea found it hard to create them initially. So it's just to give you models. In the end, the teacher is you. It has to be your models and your questions and your changes on the variations on the theme. But we all steal ideas from other people. So you get the idea and then you kind of do what fits you. So the only idea was to give people ideas. The reason I showed you the parallel task, because I watched, it's easier for me to talk about the other ones. But the reason a lot of teachers like the parallel task is they can get right to what they want to do. I want kids to be able to do this kind of question. So that will be one of their parallels. And then what they'll do is do that tweak to keep their other kids with them. So often, even though the other ones are more fun, they kind of go there because it feels more honest to their curriculum. I think both things can happen, but anyway, there you go, and thank you for being so good about starting at 8 o'clock. Oh, the website, yeah, sorry, thanks. The website, good.